There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
This is Talking of Books with Isabel Abouhul, Annabelle Corton, and the rest of the Festival of Literature team.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hello, welcome to Talking of Books. If you've just tuned in, my name's Annabelle Corton, and with me is my dazzling co-host, Natalie Madison.
Hello.
We also have our guest reviewer, Daniel LeBlanc, in for reviewing Book of the Week this week. How are you?
Very good.
So Daniel's going to lurk in the corner for a little while because we have a few things that we need to talk about before we move on to Book of the Week. And we need to look at what's going on around town in the arts and culture scene.
Book News, your latest literary roundup.
So as you know, I work for the Emirates Literature Foundation, and I have a few updates from there first. So if you are under the age of 25 and you like writing competitions and you're a student, the Oxford University Press Short Story Competition and Tallinn Poetry Awards are open for submission. So if you go to emiratesliterature.com, all the information is on there. The theme is memories. And submissions, the date for submissions closes on the 20th of November. So you do have time to get writing, get those submissions in. Another update, and that's the fact that we were talking about the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature earlier. And I don't think I've kind of told you when that's actually happening next year. I think we forget because we're so involved in it. So basically, you need to put this in your calendar. Now, the 1st to the 10th of March 2018 are the dates for next year, and it's the festival's 10th anniversary. Now, the thing is, I know exactly who's coming next year, and you can pry those names out of my cold, dead hands before they're officially announced at the end of October. But it's the 10th anniversary, so I'm telling you now, we are pulling out all the stops.
I'll work on her, listeners. Message in, I'll work on her, see if I can get anything.
She's getting the thumb screws out now. So yeah, seriously, I've never been so excited by the programme. I know I'm biased, but I'm seriously excited, and it's really hard not being able to tell you. So I'm going to move on before I give anything away. And on the subject of the festival, more exciting news, we're up for a What's On Award. And this means that we need popular votes for this. So if you care, which I hope you do, and you like the festival, we're up for the favourite festival category. And if you go to whatson.ae, you can cast your vote there. And if you need an incentive to log on and go online, because I know it's so hard to open your browser, you can go into a draw to win 4 VIP tickets to Party in the Park, which I thought was quite a cool
That's
incentive.
Quite a motivation, yeah.
Yeah, to put all your details in, which is so time consuming. I'm really lazy about stuff like
that.
Not
that we don't all spend 100% of our time looking at computer screens anyway. Yeah. I'm sure we can manage it.
So other than voting for us for the What's On Awards and putting the dates for the Emirates Literature Festival in your calendar, 1st to the 10th of March next year, what else can we do?
Well, really excitingly, there is a short and sweet poetry festival coming up. And if you didn't need any inspiration before, Afro Attic has just inspired me to get involved in all things poetry. So it's on the 22nd and 23rd of September. Which is...
Yes. So it happened yesterday, but it's also happening today.
Right. Okay. So it happened yesterday. As I was saying that, I was thinking, wait, have I gone into a time warp? So it happened yesterday. It's also happening today. And it's at the Junction, which is in Al Circle Avenue in Alcoz. And the focus of this short and sweet poetry is the spoken word. And all other distractions are removed so that the audience and judges can focus on the words and delivery. The festival is open to all. You can catch two shows today. So after you finish watching, listening to our brilliant show, you can go along. There's one at 4 p.m. and one at 7 p.m. and tickets are an absolute bargain at 50 dirhams.
So if you're looking for something to do today, this afternoon, this evening, there you go, short and sweet poetry festival. Speaking of Afro Attic, we did have some text messages that came in after she left, some really lovely ones. I think this is actually my mum texting in. she's Afra's biggest fan. She says, Afra, amazing, you're an inspiration. She's put a little heart emoji as well. And also we saw Afra at the Desert Stanzas event in March. While she was speaking, the desert held its breath. Not an ibex sneezed or scorpion scuttled, spellbinding and powerful. And kisses with that text message as well. Lots of affection for Afra. I have some international book news as well. Okay, this is really exciting. So if you like audiobooks, and actually audiobook sales have gone up in the US 29% this year. So that was the news that we shared last week. So fans of audiobooks are really coming forward and increasing every single day. Kenneth Branagh will be the voice of a new Murder on the Orient Express audiobook.
That's going to be that's the perfect voice.
He is. And he's also starring and directing because, you know, why do one when you can do both? You're Kenneth Branagh.
Of course.
He's starring in the upcoming film adaptation, which, by the way, is out here in the UAE on the 9th of November. And it will be released, the audiobook anyway, on the 19th of October alongside the official paperback tie-in to the film. So if you haven't either read or know about the Agatha Christie, it's probably one of her most famous books, isn't it?
Yeah, Murder we do it in drama at school. We love it.
So the concept or the plot is basically there's a murder on the famous Orient Express train. 13 strangers are stranded and everyone is a suspect. You know, it's the perfect, you know,
and Poirot's
spark for a story. And Poirot has to figure out who done it before the murderer strikes again. If you want to have an idea of what Kenneth Branagh sounds like as Poirot, to see whether you even want to get the audiobook, here he is in a snippet from the film trailer.
A passenger has died. He was murdered. The murderer is on the train with us now. And every one of you is a suspect. So, let us catch a killer.
So there you go, Kenneth Branagh as Poirot in Murder on the Orient Express. I can't wait for that film to come out.
No, neither can I. Absolutely fantastic. What was the date you said it's coming out again? Remind us.
Is
it the 9th of...
9th of November.
Yes, good. Okay, that's going in the diary.
That's just too far away, though. But the good news is that in a month's time, you can listen to the audiobook if you really cannot wait for the film. So there is that. We just had a text come in from Pratiti saying Poetry Fest was fantastic. So there you go. Get down there today if you want to experience some poetry. And now... we have to do something completely different, don't we?
And now for something completely different.
So with us in the studio, we've got Daniel, who's been patiently lurking in the corner. We're answering the question today in our book of the week, what would happen if aliens landed and made first contact in Lagos, Nigeria? That's the question that Nnedi Okorafor asks in her novel, Lagoon.
Book of the week, what you should be reading.
So first question, Daniel, did you enjoy the book?
Totally. No, it reads a bit like a cross between a good film script that's got tones of sci-fi, fantasy, magical realism. It's got superheroes, almost immortals, mythological creatures, all kind of unleashed in a unique setting.
So this is basically about an alien invasion in the city of Lagos and how Lagosians of all walks of life handle it. But specifically, it's about three initial characters. Is that right? So you've got a rapper. Remind me of the other two.
You've got Adora, who's a marine biologist. You've got Anthony, who's a Ghanaian rapper. And then you've got Agu, who's a soldier.
Did you enjoy this, Natalie?
Yeah, I did actually, but it took me a really long time to get into it, I have to be honest. I was really kind of reading it at first, like, what is this? Is this just a kind of cultural book about Africa? Is it sci-fi? I kind of wouldn't have even put it there at first. Yeah, it took a long time. How did you find it at first?
It is different because almost it's got like various sections to it, and it takes the whole invasion by aliens trope on a different level. It's not like your typical H.G. Wells, you know, War of the Worlds, or it's more looking at it from a completely different perspective. Instead of your typical colonialist view of come in and the invaders are going to come and destroy us all and, you know, amalgamate us all into their culture, it's totally different.
It almost felt like a morality tale. It had a kind of, all that kind of, I don't know, like you kind of went on this journey and there was this kind of folk tale morality sort of feel to it as well. It wasn't just your standard sci-fi.
Yeah.
Well, my first question would actually be, we've seen Arrival come out, the film Arrival, which is all about first contact and how that communication would realistically happen. And for anybody who's listening and hasn't read the book, what is the interaction between the aliens and the humans in Lagoon? Is it hostile? Is it friendly? What is that invasion process like?
It's almost agnostic. It's quite strange. They're on such a different level. They're communicating with nature. They're communicating with the earth and the ocean. And that's what makes it quite different. And then the three characters get enthralled in this because they're special in the sense that they've been chosen by, almost by Lagos itself to be the emissaries, as Lagos itself as a character, because you feel that in the story.
This is going to take you on a slight detour, but I just need to mention that usually in Book of the Week we talk about books that are hot off the press, and this book came out in 2014, but we never talked about it when it did. And also, Nnedi Okorafor has been in the news lately for different reasons. Have you heard about this?
No.
So her 2010 novel, Who Fears Death, is soon to be adapted as a major fantasy TV series by HBO and George R.R. Martin.
Wow.
So that's been in the news a lot because obviously, you know, the latest season of Game of Thrones has ended. We're all completely bereft.
Yes, we are.
I cried when it finished, but let's not go into that. So it's no surprise that the slightest whiff of HBO and George R.R. Martin means that she's all over the news. But it does sound like it's going to be just as epic. And it's nothing like Game of Thrones. So if you're wondering, people are attaching the Game of Thrones tag to it because George R.R. Martin is involved, but the plot is completely different. So if I give you an idea before we go back to Lagoon. So the idea is that in Who Fears Death, in a far future post-nuclear Holocaust Africa, genocide plagues one region, and the aggressors exterminate a village or a people called the Okiki. But when the only surviving member is sexually assaulted, she manages to escape and she wanders the desert and she gives birth to a baby girl and instinctively knows that she is different. And then this girl is raised by a shaman and the girl grows up to discover her magical destiny is to end the genocide of her people. So it's really dark and it sounds like it will be an epic story. But yeah, so Africa is a central theme to her novels. And we'll talk about this more when we come back. Keep your text coming in to 4001.
From John Ronson to James Dashner, Jane Austen to Zadie Smith, this is Talking of Books on Dubai I 103.8.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. My name's Natalie Madison and our host today is Annabelle Corton.
Hello.
And we are in our Book of the Week section and we have just been having a really interesting conversation off air about the author today, and the author is Nnedi Okorafor. I'm really hoping I said that correctly.
You did, yeah.
And she is a Nigerian-American author and writes African-based science fiction, fantasy and magical realism for both children and adults. And we're lucky enough to be reviewing her book Lagoon today. She's award-winning. She's the winner of the Hugo, Nebula and World Fantasy Awards. And she's actually a professor at the University of Buffalo in New York. And we were just talking off air and you had some really interesting links between this author, Nnedi, and an author you'd read previously. Do you want to fill us in on that?
Yeah, Ben Okri's been to Dubai at Litfest quite a few times, Annabelle?
Yeah, he has.
Anyway, about 20-odd years ago, I read his book, The Famished Road, which is all, you know, dives deep into the Nigerian mythology. And what's interesting is you see a little bit of those type of characters, like Anansi, who's one of the big immortals in that cultural mythology. And what I found really interesting was that there's actually a character that comes to life, a mythological character, which is the Famished Road. It's actually in there, and I'm sure she was nodding at him. And I didn't see anything on this on the net. I just found it interesting.
That's why I love Book of the Week and having guest reviewers come in, because somebody always picks up on something that isn't in any of the reviews that you can find online. So this is one of those things. There's a very strong connection to Nigeria in this book. I mean, it's called Lagoon, but the idea is that the aliens land in Lagos in Nigeria. And she did grow up in America, but here she is talking about how Nigeria and America influenced her in different ways.
Well, I was born in Cincinnati, Ohio, but I spent most of my life in this area, which is Olympia Fields, Illinois, which is a south suburb of Chicago. And both of my parents were born and raised in Nigeria, and then they came to the United States in 1969, so they're naturalized citizens of the United States. And even though they are citizens of the United States, they also wanted to maintain a connection to home, which is Nigeria. And so from a very young age, they have been taking my siblings and I back to Nigeria to kind of connect with family, get to know everybody. And because of that, you know, we have this dual kind of dual cultural thing that I've grown up with, growing up in the United States, but also having a very strong Nigerian background.
Hi, welcome back to Talking of Books. So that was Nenedi talking about her inspiration and her background for writing her African-based science fiction. We were wondering why she was inspired to write Lagoon in the first place, and a repeat piece of information kept coming up, and it was basically because of the film District 9. Have either of you seen it?
No.
Yes, I have.
You have. What did you think of it?
It's a quirky film. It's almost a B film, but it's interesting because it's based in Africa again. Where I think this one's in South Africa, if I recall correctly, and it's all about alienation and different perspectives and you know, racism and prejudice, but this time from the perspective of aliens being almost refugees in a country.
Yeah. A lot of people have said that the film was kind of a metaphor for apartheid as well, but Nnedi Okorafor and many other Nigerians absolutely despised District 9. She was inspired to write Lagoon because of how angry she was with the depiction of Nigerians in the film. And it was nominated for an Oscar, but it caused an outcry after it was released in 2009, with the Nigerian government demanding an apology from the filmmakers and banning it from local cinemas. It was that bad. And I've got a quote here from her about District 9. She says, "I started writing it as a screenplay for Nollywood director Chidi Chikere." I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. She's talking about Lagoon here. She says, "He and I were both deeply irritated with the South African science fiction film District 9's abysmal stereotyping of Nigerians. Once I started writing it, it quickly became something other than a response to District 9. It became its own story with its own soul." So, yeah.
Yeah, really interesting. Leading on from that, there's actually a link to the UAE with Nnedi that probably we wouldn't have ever thought. And I was doing some research last night, and she says that along with the wanting to respond to District 9, she was inspired also by a trip to the UAE, which was the first time she had ever seen a real jellyfish, you know, a live jellyfish. And she looked at this creature and felt it looked so alien that she then decided she wanted to give a narrative voice to sea creatures, and it kind of then developed and led, and so we have Lagoon.
That's amazing.
So
she was inspired by jellyfish.
Yes.
Well, now you're talking about jellyfish and the ocean. I mean, sea creatures and the ocean are a big part of Lagoon. And I don't know about you, because you're a big sci-fi fan, aren't you, Daniel?
Mm-hmm.
Whether you've come across this before. I mean, I was speaking to my mum, who's a massive sci-fi fan as well, about whether the use of the ocean as a kind of basis for first contact is something that's been done before. I mean, does it feel familiar to you in any way?
It does. I can't really think of a title off the top of my head right now. The Abyss is one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole point that we don't, you know, we know more about, you know, space in some ways than we do about our own oceans. You know, that comes up a lot. So there's definitely a link there.
I mean, she's actually said that she's completely fascinated with the ocean, and now with jellyfish probably because of the UAE, and the otherworldly nature of it, like you've just said. We know more about space than we do about the ocean, which is kind of incredible. And she says, "I love ocean life. I'm fascinated that so much of it remains unexplored by human beings. Diluted seawater consisted of nearly the same concentration of elements and minerals as blood plasma. They've got the same amount of sodium too. Seawater has even been used successfully in blood transfusions in animals. We all came from the water. As is said more than once in the novel, water is life." So I think it's very important that she chose water. It's almost a character in itself in this novel. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether you agree with that.
I totally agree with you. In a way, the aliens chose that, and that's what they kind of explain in the book. The aliens chose to go via water because most of the planet Earth is water. So
it's a smart move on their part.
Exactly, and they're trying to, you know, amalgamate with nature. And there's actually, it's quite funny because you see all sorts of multiple perspectives in this book. So you even have a bat that all of a sudden gets more and more brains, and a swordfish that, you know, gets mutated into something bigger and better that it wanted to become. And it's just, it's got a lot of, it's a strange book that way, because it takes you all over the place. But at the same time, there's kind of a script-like feel, and you can feel this blockbuster. It's very self-aware that it's trying to, that it's originated as a script.
It feels like a movie completely when you read it. And in fact, that might have been something that kind of hindered me getting into it as much as just the standard kind of novel format, where it's really descriptive and all. This felt, as I was reading it, I was imagining the film.
Well, that's why I liked it.
Oh,
so I had the reverse experience, where, because I still remember the first bit of the book, where you don't quite know what perspective it's from, because it's talking about moving through the water.
Yeah, the swordfish.
And you don't know that it's a swordfish. You're trying to figure out what on earth am I? Because you feel like you are the swordfish. Yeah. She's written it from that perspective. And it just felt very cinematic. I could picture everything exactly. And I actually liked that about the book, because I like it when books are quite cinematic. Mm. But maybe that's a personal preference. We just had a text come in. Yeah, we've got a couple about whether this has been done before, whether the ocean first contact thing is a usual thing. So The Kraken by China Mieville came up. So you're nodding your head now.
I'm wondering if that's my daughter.
And then we've got The Abyss as well, which you already mentioned. So a lot of people are seeing some similarities there.
Mm.
Something else that I want to talk about, and we talked about lots of different characters in this novel. Are there too many, or do you think that works well?
I think it works well. I mean, it's a different novel, and you just got to go in there with an open spirit and have fun reading it.
Were there any characters that you wanted more time with? Or did you enjoy that fleeting nature?
I guess because it's coming from the kind of a script writing perspective, I guess I would imagine it's almost like soap opera-ish. And they could obviously put more time with each and every one of the characters, but it fits together somehow. And you could totally see this turning into a TV series.
Mm. It hasn't got that kind of linear quality going through. It's very episodic. You're kind of in this one person's world or mind, or and then you're over here and then you're there, which kind of goes against what I was saying earlier, but I did enjoy that. I liked that episodic quality of it. It could be picked up as a series and split into, you know, 12 episodes.
I think it would even be a bet. I think this is a book that would turn into better TV, actually. Mm. You know, with 12 hours of script writing and development of all the characters, because you're right, there's the gangsters, there's the kind of evangelical, you know, nefarious priest and so on. So there's a lot of different angles to it, and you could see them developing each and every one of the characters a lot deeper.
Even the opening is those three characters walking towards that meeting point in the center of the beach before the big wave, and that sets the precedent for this is going to be lots of different people's kind of experiences of it. It's not just one central protagonist all the way through.
I love that she chose such different types of people as well. So it's almost like a joke, isn't it? Three people walking
to a bar. A soldier, a marine biologist, and
a rapper.
Yeah.
You know, the most unlikely people. Yeah. But that feels real, though, because, you know, you always think in cases like this, and if there's a natural disaster or aliens invade, like where you will be and who you will be with. I mean, you can't choose that. Yeah. So I like that. That's quite realistic, isn't it? You end up with who you end up with, and you've just got to kind of soldier on.
Yeah,
don't you?
Absolutely. And the marine biologist, I forget her name, Adiodi or the opening.
Adora.
Thank you. She would never have expected this moment to be the moment she comes into contact. She's just had a horrible argument with her husband, and she's come down to the beach to clear her mind, and she's probably thinking of a million other things, and then this moment is sprung on her. And like you say, Annabelle, it feels really kind of real. Like, when do you expect to come into contact with alien life?
Yeah, it's not something that you plan or put in your diary, is it?
Yeah.
And the whole rapper element is quite funny, because they keep going on about certain lyrics, and they bring it back, and it's quite humorous at points.
Mm. Yeah, and you need that in something like this, because it is dealing with quite serious themes and ideas. And you were talking about the episodic nature of the book, and I think a reviewer that I found put it really well. They said it's as choppy a read as the ocean on a stormy day.
Wow.
Which kind of makes sense, seeing as what she's talking about here. And she also said, we were talking about all the different types of characters, and they're so varied. You know, you've got rappers, marine biologists, priests, etc. And the content bubbles over with characters from different species, ethnicities, classes, genders, sexualities, religions. If ever a book set out to mirror the vibrant, brimming city for which it was almost titled, Lagoon has certainly done it. Yeah. That's something I agree with.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially as it's in response to District 9, where she felt that they had been really, really pigeonholed as she really didn't like the way kind of the Nigerian people were portrayed. So she's almost gone the opposite way and said, I'm not going to pigeonhole anyone. I'm going to include every possible character and type of person I can to show the diversity.
I think one of the other angles is how the aliens announce their presence by taking over everybody's... I'm giving a little plot perspective here, but for what it's worth, they take over everyone's mobile phones and televisions and anything with a screen, and they say, we are here, in an interesting way. Now, I won't say more than that, but what's more interesting is that the rest of the world kind of ignores it because it's happening in Africa. And that's in itself is an interesting statement, because that's kind of the way the situation is in a way.
Yeah. We'll be back with final thoughts on Lagoon by Nnedi Okorafor. But remember, if you want to win a copy from the Mystery Lit Fest shelf, please text in your name and your favourite book of all time to 4001. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
From Stephen King to Madhul Jaffrey, Anthony Horowitz to Kevin Kwan, this is Talking of Books.
On Dubai I 103.8.
Hello and welcome back to Talking of Books. I'm Annabelle Corton. With me in the studio, my co-host, Natalie Madison. If you've just tuned in, we're reviewing with Daniel LeBlanc, our lead reviewer, Lagoon by Nnedi Okorafor. We've got a few texts come in because I said, if you want to win a mystery book off the Lit Fest shelf, text in your name and your favourite book of all time to 4001. It's a lucky dip. You don't know what you're going to get. But we've got some people's favourite books, The Unwanted, The Firm, I, Coriander, which sounds like a great book. Oh, by Sally Gardner, fusion of historical fiction with magical realism. We also have a few texts in about the Lagoon book by Nnedi Okorafor, saying that humans are also 70% water, making an observation of the use of the ocean and that being a central, almost character in this book. Now, while we were off air, you were talking about the title itself, Lagoon, and where that came from. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, it comes from Lagos, means lagoon in Portuguese, if I recall.
Yeah, so lagoon in Portuguese is Lagos. And Nnedi actually had a comment about this, because originally she was going to just call it Lagos. And the thing that she said was, I was originally going to call it Lagos, but then I could just hear certain Nigerians snarking. Who is this American Nigerian to have the nerve to name her novel after my city?
Yeah.
So she decided to be a little bit clever with it. So that's why it's called Lagoon and not Lagos. And the other thing that I wanted us to talk about, because I don't think we've really discussed it enough, and that's the aliens and their purpose in this novel for actually being on Earth, for being in the ocean, for making human contact. What's their purpose? Why are they here?
They're here to change things. That's pretty much. It's quite mysterious in a way, and it's almost like maybe they want to say welcome to the universe, planet Earth, and it's quite humorous when you think they've chosen Nigeria to do it from. And why they did that is because if it was based in New York or London or L.A. or Paris, you know, the concept, the way the author explains it, is those places are so well organized, you'd have the government on top of it so quickly that they may not be able to get their message out correctly. That's why they do it the way they do, or where they chose to visit.
It's interesting that you say about the aliens coming to change, their purpose being to come and kind of change things. I was reading, and it talks about the woman, the dark-skinned woman who turns out to be an alien, and they talk about her a lot, Aodel.
Yeah. Oh, the alien ambassador.
Yeah. And she literally changes. She's a shapeshifter, isn't she? Yep. And she can change to different people, animals, but also she can change into people's TVs and computer screens, and she can put messages and things like that. And so it's really interesting, this idea that there seems to be the message that come on Earth, change is necessary, catch up with the rest of us, which is a great message.
I did think there was an environmental message to it as well.
Yep.
Because as we were talking about the start of the novel and from the perspective of the swordfish earlier, which is a little bit, you know, odd, but it is striking and it does get you involved in the story. The first thing that the swordfish does, which I thought was odd because it seemed like it had an ulterior motive, was it, I think it stabs an oil pipeline?
Yes, it does. It describes it as a snake that then burst with black liquid, but we realise as humans, oh, that was an oil pipe. Yeah.
Yeah, and what happens when the aliens arrive at the bottom of the ocean is that all the creatures are drawn to it because it's purifying the water. Mm. So the alien presence is actually purifying and improving the natural life. And it seems to be a metaphor for how messy we've let things get.
Yeah, totally agree with that.
The water is completely purified to a time before humans were around. That's what they're actually saying.
Which reminds me of the day the Earth stood still, because wasn't the whole point of that that, you know, we'd mess things up so much that we were basically told, you know, no,
get your act together.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it was a little bit harsher than this novel, right?
Mm.
Yeah. So what I want to also talk about is the fact that, like, what kind of book is this? Because I know that you like science fiction. I like science fiction. I don't know whether this is something that you usually read, Natalie.
It's absolutely not. That's why that's a great thing about this show, really. I would never normally have picked this. And actually, you know, you read the blurb and then you kind of try to decide from the first page, oh, will I like this? And even after doing that, I would have gone, I'm not really a science fiction kind of gal, maybe not. But I've got persevered through it, and there's so much more to it than just science fiction. It almost feels like a disservice to just label it that. What do you think about that? Would you agree?
Yeah. It's a novel, and you can take it in so many different ways because of the nods to the African mythology, the nods to fantasy, the nods to sci-fi, the various voices, the environmental message. No, there's a lot of angles to it for sure.
I mean, she said herself that she wasn't writing a purely sci-fi novel. I mean, that's not her intention when she sets out to write in the first place. She's trying to do a lot of different things. So, in her own words, she said of Lagoon that it's biting political satire, which I think is very clear. It's creative. It's literary, which I think from her writing, it really is. She's an excellent writer. And it features many different points of view, which is very different from the other stories that she usually writes. So this cacophony of characters is also quite different from her other work, and it's not something that she's done before. And she says that she prefers usually to stay with one character. There's a lot of pidgin English in this book as well, which I think really gives it flavour. And the aliens in Lagos, because of all this, she didn't expect it to be an easy sell, because it's trying to do quite a lot. And it's a shame that Flora isn't here still, because I've had talks from editors before when they're talking about editing, and when you're pitching your novel to a publisher, it really needs to be quite clear, like, what it is.
Mm.
And if I can just see her thinking, like, if she's trying to pitch this to somebody, trying to figure out exactly what it is quite difficult.
Can you imagine the conversation with an editor? So I've got this book. Okay, that's a good start. What's it about? Well, it's kind of aliens, but it's set in Africa, and I'd really like it to have a human element. There's a bit of mythology and a swordfish. We're in his mind. Stay with me on this. Like, how can you imagine the conversation?
It's funny as well, because I swear I read something in the reviews where she mentioned that her editors wanted her to keep the pidgin English in there.
Right.
And what's funny, the book is very self-aware that it's script-like, and at the end they've got a section called Special Bonus Features.
Oh.
And I think in a previous one, which I need to look up now, there's actually deleted scenes, which is what the people of Chicago think of what's going on.
Yeah.
But in the Special Bonus Feature, you can find a glossary of Nigerian words, phrases, and pidgin English terms, which, you know, at least you don't have to use the great googly while you're writing. You can just go
great
to the
googly.
Back. Yeah, at the back.
So I wondered when I was reading this, like, how she started writing science fiction. We actually have her talking about that and how she started.
The reason why I chose to write fantasy slash magical realism is really, it started with the very first story that I wrote. It's just the way that I see the world. I see the world as a magical place. So when I sat down to write stories, and the first story that I wrote was realistic. It was realism. It was a true story that happened to myself and my sisters. And when I wrote that story, the magical things just kind of came out. You know, they came out in what I was in the story that I was writing. So it's really more about the way that I see the world. And then at some point, the more that I wrote, the more that I felt confident about portraying those magical things that I would see or that I would imagine, and putting that in my work. So at that point, I jumped the rails from magical realism to flat out fantasy, where things are just really, the magical aspects are much stronger.
So that's Nanetti talking about why she writes the genre that she does and where her inspiration came from. Now, final thoughts on the novel, anything else that you'd like to mention, and can you give it a rating out of 5?
I'll give it a 3.5.
Oh.
Mainly because it's not my favorite, you know, when it's your favorite book, you go on and on about it. But what I gotta say is that it's really fun reading. It's very light, and it's something that you don't have to concentrate too much on. You know, you can go back and forth on it. There's enough little episodes to it. The chapters are short, you know, something to read along on the beach. But what's nice is it's a different voice, and that's what, you know, I actually probably should bring it up to a 4 in the sense of, will I remember having read this book for a long time? Absolutely. So from the perspective of, is it my favorite script? Probably not. But from a perspective of being very memorable and unique and different, it's a lot of fun. So it's worth reading just from that perspective.
What about you, Natalie?
Yeah, I think I would agree with the 3.5, because I think it took me a little bit of time to get into it, and that maybe hindered my enjoyment. I kind of, you know, sometimes you get a book, I don't know if it's just me that does this, but I can be out and I'll think, oh, I wonder what so-and-so is doing, and then I remember, oh no, that person's in the book, they don't exist in my real life. And that for me is when I'm really into a book and I can't wait to get back and find out. And this book was kind of, it got better and better and better, but there wasn't that sense of, oh, I just have to go and read it, you know. I was kind of like, but you're absolutely right, it's memorable. If I try and describe this to someone, they want to read it because they're like, what?
So I'm actually going a little bit higher, because I really loved it, because I thought it was really cinematic, and I definitely, it kept me turning the page. So I'm giving this a 4 out of 5. Mm. And the only reason I'm not giving it a 5 is because personally, I like less characters in my books, and that's just personal preference.
And that's a Game of Thrones fan saying that.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I've only seen the television series. I still haven't managed to read the books, which I probably have time to, seeing as Game of Thrones isn't out again until 2019.
Set aside 2 years in your life to read those books.
And it's not like the next one's coming out anytime soon, because George R. R. Martin seems to need to be locked into a room to write his book. But bless him, he's trying to make it work well. But everybody just keeps getting on at him for not writing them quick enough. Seems a little bit unfair. So that's our review for Lagoon by Nanetti Okorafor. Next up, we have Literary Soundtrack, where we pick a song based on a work of literature. Thank you so much for reviewing the book, Daniel.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Keep those texts coming in on 4001.
Book of the Week, what you should be reading. From John Ronson to James Dashner, Jane Austen to Zadie Smith, this is Talking of Books on Dubai
I 103.8. Hello, welcome back to Talking of Books. My name's Annabelle Corton. With me in the studio, Natalie Madison. If you're just tuning in, you've missed most of the show, but we still have something rather exciting coming up, one of my favourite bits of the show, which is Literary Soundtrack. So from Katy Perry to the Beatles, songwriters have been inspired by literature for years. And we're going to talk about one of the most famous ones today, but before we do that, I've just had some other book news come in that I really need to mention. So if you want to read Lagoon by Nnedi Okorafor, which is the book that we just reviewed, which had Daniel coming on to talk about that, then great. But if you want something else for your bedside table, because you are a book hoarder like I am, we were talking about Stephen King earlier. He's got another book coming out next week.
Oh, my word.
Because
more
the man
terrifying.
Just doesn't stop.
Oh, is this the one he's collaborated with
yes.
his son?
So he's collaborated with his son, Owen King, and it's called Sleeping Beauties. And rather than have me tell you what it's about, how about Owen and Stephen tell you what it's about?
Now, my father didn't encourage me to do anything because he split when I was two. My brother David was four. He said he was going out for cigarettes, and it must have been a rare brand because he's still looking so far as I know. But, yeah, so my mother raised us, and she was a reader herself, and she read to us, and she read comic books when we brought them home. She didn't like it, but she would. And I remember very vividly when I was about 7 years old, sitting out on the porch in this apartment where we lived in Stratford, Connecticut, and she read us Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And I kind of, you know, that was another thing that sort of tripped my dials. But around that same time, we were living in apartments in Connecticut, and my mother was working. She worked in a laundry for a while. And she worked in a bakery for a while, and she was a housekeeper for a while. And we didn't have much because our dad left her with a lot of bills when he ran out. But my brother came running into the room one time. We were latchkey kids before there were latchkey kids. So we got home from school. My mother was working. We had the apartment to ourselves. And David said, "You got to come up to the attic. I found a whole bunch of our dad's stuff that our mother had, you know, stowed there." So we went up. And there were boxes and boxes of stuff. He was in the Merchant Marine, and there was stuff from overseas. And there were little, you know, Japanese dolls, and there were drink coasters that from foreign places, ports of call, as they used to say. And there was a box of books, and they were paperbacks. And the one on the top was The Thing from the Tomb by H.P. Lovecraft. And when I saw that, I said, "That's really scary. This is what I want to do."
And do it he certainly does. So that's him talking about his humble origins as a writer and what made him start to write horror fiction. And, you know, the seed was planted very, very early. So the book that's coming out next week is basically, he's written it with his son, Owen King. And just very briefly, the concept is, what would happen if all the women in the world, bar one, was asleep?
Wow. What a concept.
Yeah.
A concept that lots of men would be going, brilliant.
So it's called Sleeping Beauties, and it's out next week. So if you're looking for some more Stephen King to read, there you go. Also, if you texted in with your favourite book of all time for a chance to win a mystery book off the Litfest bookshelf, we will be in touch after the show if you've made the final three or four. We haven't yet decided how nice we're going to be. And now for literary soundtrack today, we've got Wuthering Heights by Kate Bush. Now, as I was saying, you know, songwriters have been inspired by literature for years, and sometimes you don't even know. I mean, one of my favourite facts that I found out was that Katy Perry's Firework was inspired by Jack Kerouac, which is just so unlikely.
Has she just said that to sound a little bit
kind of... No, if you actually compare the lyrics and the passage that she's talking about, she was definitely inspired by Jack Kerouac. Yeah, and one of my favourite things about Wuthering Heights by Kate Bush is that everybody knows it and they associate it with the crazy video and the facial expressions and the dances. And I didn't realise quite how fangirly people get about this. So to celebrate the release of the music video of the song, every year there's this thing called a dance-a-thon. So people, there's a video, you can find it online, of people dancing in a park. There's hundreds of people, you know, men and women, dressed in the red dress with the wig on, doing the choreographed dance to Wuthering Heights in the park.
Amazing. I feel like we need to recreate that.
You do. Are you brave enough?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I didn't bring a red dress though.
No, it's fine. We'll be dancing while the song plays.
Yeah.
So yeah, Wuthering Heights, book by the Bronte sisters, and it's about the tumultuous relationship between Kathy and Heathcliff. And this is Kate Bush singing Wuthering Heights.
Literary soundtrack.
Wuthering Heights is a novel that's kept me company in every decade of my life. I came across the novel for the first time on the shelves of my parents' bookcase in the 1960s. I was far too young to understand it, but I immediately fell under its spell. It was Wuthering Heights that taught me how to be a reader. But more than that, it's the book that taught me how to be a writer. That you must write the book you want to write. You must allow yourself to write characters that are thoroughly unlikable. Many of the things that I did naturally and thought they were mine were an echo of what I'd read in Wuthering Heights. So a strong lead character who is a woman, a hero who is a woman rather than a heroine, if you like. Landscape, being a character at the heart of things, the mixing of different time periods, the idea that in strong emotions there will be sacrifice and consequences to those emotions, the idea that the only resolution will be the calm that comes at the end. These things I now see in my own books. It felt intensely private reading Wuthering Heights, and that indeed is still what I rather like about reading, that it's a private thing. It shows you that a book that lasts has got so many different layers in it that you will see something different every time you read it. And more than anything else, a good novel is finished by the reader. So you take the person you are to the book, and the novel changes because of that. It's a two-way street, if you like, between reader and writer. And learning that, it's all about learning to leave the white space when you're writing so that the reader finish it for themselves. I don't think novels should be relevant. I think they should make you think and make you see things differently and move you and make you ask questions about who you are and what you value and what matters. That's how real art works, and that's why it endures.
So you can probably tell that that wasn't a song. That was actually Kate Moss talking about Wuthering Heights, but not, as you pointed out, the supermodel.
No, we should point that out, that the supermodel Kate Moss has not taken to literary critique.
That was, in fact, the author, Kate Moss. You should definitely check her books out. She's amazing. Because I just thought it would be good to remind ourselves, you know, of the magic of Wuthering Heights before we get into listening to Kate Bush going a little bit mad singing about Kathy and Heathcliff. Now, we have to preface this by saying that once the song comes on, if you know it, you do tend to want to do the dance and all the flailing arm movements and the crazy facial expressions, but maybe just stick to the facial expressions if you're driving. I do not want to be responsible for any accidents.
Passengers, go crazy.
Yeah, go mad. But don't distract your driver. No. That's very important. So thank you so much for listening to Talking of Books. I'm Annabelle Corson, Natalie Madison.
Thank you very much.
And enjoy the song. Have a lovely day.
Yeah. This is Talking of Books.
Stay one step ahead with Dubai Eye 103.8.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.